There's something which we didn't finish up in which pasuk. Pasuk of Beis. Perek Beis, Pasuk of Beis. So we talked about Gula last time. Gula means revelation. When you ascribe the comments to their author, their origin, that's a form of revelation. That's Gula, and that brings Gula. The Vilna Gaon has the kashya, which we should all be asking ourselves. Achashverosh was a Russia. According to some accounts, he was a bigger Russian than Haman. Achashverosh stopped the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Achashverosh agreed to kill the entire Jewish people. He did agree, and he didn't even take money for it. Two of his foot soldiers, two of the guards, are planning to assassinate Achashverosh. All right, now granted, we saw one version, we saw the Targum that they were going to kill Achashverosh and Esther. But that's not the Pashtus. On the surface, the plain meaning of the Pasuk is they were only planning on killing Achashverosh. Mordechai finds out about it. Two soldiers, two guards are going to kill Achashverosh. Esther finds out about it. Two of the guards are going to kill Achashverosh. And they save his life. Why save his life? He's a Russia. He's a murderer. He's a corrupter. I mean, don't forget, this is the one that made a Mishnah for 187 days for the express purpose of corrupting the Jewish people. I mean, on a scale, in my book, he gets the prize on a scale of rishus. Chayte umachtias arabim. He spent 180 days, a half a year, plotting the best way to bring down the Jewish people. And then he implemented it in 7 days, and he was successful. Why is he saving his life? He was a bad man.
In the long run.
The Vilna Gaon answers, I mean, this is quite consistent with what we learned before. Achashverosh was a Russia. He was bad. But Mordechai and Esther understood that right now, he's neither good nor bad. He's a tool in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They saw that Achashverosh, whatever choices he made until now, he had some bad ones. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't give him that idea to make the Mishnah, to make the party. That was his own bad choice. But from that moment on, Achashverosh is no longer in control of his choices. He's a tool. He's being used. And in this particular instance, he's being used to save Klal Yisrael.
But
he's going to be the salvation of Klal Yisrael.
But had he been killed, then maybe they wouldn't have been put in danger in the first place.
Maybe, yeah, maybe not. I mean, you can't know that. And it really doesn't matter, because right now, they saw that things were going according to a higher order, a higher level, the Malam Adar Chateva. And Achashverosh was being used by Kadosh Baruch Hu. So what would have, could have, should have, you don't second guess God. God is using him, you leave him alone, you don't touch him. They realized that there's a nace that's going to come through Achashverosh, and you don't touch him. So they weren't saving Achashverosh, they were saving the nace. Achashverosh himself didn't deserve to live. By Pasuk of Gimel, Rabbi Yisai. Vayivukash Adavar, it was investigated. Vayimatse, and they discovered that it was true. Achashverosh didn't just take Esther and Mordechai's word for it. They launched an investigation. Vayimatse, it was found to be true. Vayitalu Shneim al Eitz, and they were hung, both of them, on a tree. Vayikase b'sefer divrei hayamim, and it was written in the book of Chronicles, the Chronicles of the Days, lifnei hamelech, in front of the king. On this pasuk, the Vilna Gaon explains a couple of things. First of all, how do you prove such a thing? They didn't do anything. They never did it. They were preempted. Mordechai overheard one of them talking to the other in a language that nobody understands except for them. That they want to kill the Vilna Gaon. That they want to kill the king. And there was an investigation. And they found it to be true. How? In what manner? In what way? How do you find something to be true? If they had the conversation, so then they convicted themselves.
Could have had like a map. They could have had like something written out that they found in their room under their bed.
Well, what was that? Or they could have tortured them.
True.
But then they'll admit anything under torture.
That's true.
The Vilna Gaon says that they had a plot. They had it, you know, they had it worked out. He brings a Gemara. I mean, Gemara Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel, Amud Beis. They had it all worked out. They had different shifts for guarding the palace, and they had to be in a certain place at a certain time in order to assassinate him. We saw the Targum said they were going to kill him with a sword. They had to be in the right place in the right time. They switched shifts. One of them took the other's shift in order to free him up. They had to pull a switcheroo. They couldn't just leave one of the slots empty. They had to have, you know, one guy would do it, and the other guy took his turn.
One did two shifts?
Something like that. Either one did two, one did two shifts, so he freed up the other one. Something like that. I mean, I don't know the details, but something like that. And he was there where he shouldn't have been. You know, if there's ever like a prison break or something, and the authorities suspect complicity, like maybe it was an inside job, that's one of the first things they check is to see who was on duty then. And if somebody was where he wasn't supposed to be, so then right away, you know, they zoom in on him. They look for irregularities. So the Vilna Gaon says, that's what's meant by V'yivukash HaDavar. They investigated it, V'yimotzei. V'yimotzei means it was discovered, it was found. Because they found something. V'yimotzei means they found something. They found something. They found someone where he wasn't supposed to be. Someone rearranged the schedule of the guards. They found something. And that convicted them. There's a nace in this pasuk. A nace among many nisim. The pasuk states that they wrote down the account of this event in the Divrei HaYamim. Every king had a chronicle. A scribe wrote down the events of importance for them to be preserved. The pasuk says it was written lifnei HaMelech, which means that the king was present when it was written. Why is that important? The Vilna Gaon says b'derech ha'olam, the way of kings, was they, you know, they either it was like standing orders, what the guy's supposed to write, or if the king deemed something worthy of inclusion, he would tell him, and then he'd go to the library and he'd write it. You know, they have the whole setup there. They didn't write things down in front of the king. The king's antechamber wasn't the library. They had a place for those things. I mean, it's sort of hard for us to relate to these things because we're growing up in a society in a world that everything goes. Like, why not write in front of the king? There was palace etiquette, there was decorum. The scribe did not take out his palm pilot and scribble, you know, and script on his notepad in front of the king. And here, this practice deviated from the norm. He wrote it down in front of the king, which is strange. And abnormalities are meant for us to learn something. The Vilna Gaon says that this was an ace. Later on Later on in the Megillah, Ahasuerus' sleep is disturbed, and he asks for them to read to him from the Divrei Hayamim. So the guy says he was looking for something specific, it wasn't just random. That he remembered something being written about a plot against him. And he wanted them to refresh his memory. The Vilna Gaon said, the only reason why Ahasuerus remembered this is because he was present at the time it was written. So this seemingly small, minor, insignificant detail that the scribe wrote down, he recorded the salvation of the king at the hands of Mordechai and Esther, and he wrote it down in front of him, led to the ultimate discovery by Ahasuerus that Mordechai was never rewarded. And that was the beginning of the end. That was the proverbial beginning of the end for Haman. The Fnei HaMelech. Okay. Perek Gimel, Pasuk Aleph. Acher Hadvarim Ha'ila, after these things. Gidal HaMelech Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus made big. Gidal means to make big. As Haman, Ben Amdasa, Ha'agagi. So a particular note is being made of the fact that he's from Agag. Like we said in the Gemara, Agag was spared by Shaul, Agagi v'nesehu. He lifted him up. V'yasem is kisayim y'al sarim. And he raised his, I guess it's not a throne, but his chair, from above all the officers, asherita, which were with him. That was the custom in Persia, that the elevation of one's chair was indicative of his area of importance, his level of importance in the kingdom. And nowadays in corporate America, you judge someone's importance by cubic office space and the view that you have.
And how nice your chair is also.
And how nice your chair is. But I think the cubic office space, cubic feet, is like an indicative of how high you are in the pecking order, and whether you have an office with a window and there's a view. So they raised it up. Acher Dvar Me'ila. The Targum says, what does it mean when it says Acher Hadvar Me'ila, after these things? After what things? What things? What?
The plot.
After the plot of Bigson and Saras. Yeah. That's not directly related. Although I see the connection, but it's not directly related.
Maybe it was after you know, he found Esther. Maybe Haman was one of the people who suggested this whole idea, and then that led to him finding Esther. Maybe he was so happy that he elevated.
Well, he did take credit for it. He wasn't the one that suggested the idea, but he did take credit for it. Mm. He did. But it wasn't his idea. It was the young lads of the kingdom. But Haman took credit. Everything in the kingdom, Haman took credit for. These are all true, but the Targum zooms in on one thing. It said the Midas Adin. Kadosh Baruch Hu has a Midas, it's called Midas Adin. Kadosh Baruch Hu chooses to relate this to this world with Din. It's to our great fortune that a Kadosh Baruch Hu mitigates the Din with Rachamim. But there is Din nonetheless. The world is run with Din. That means you get exactly what you deserve, whether it's reward or punishment. Rachamim is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts it off until later. He gives the person a chance to tshuva. He doesn't immediately give him punishment. Baruch Hashem, Hashem Yirachim. Or if Hashem does give a punishment, it'll be broken up into small increments. But the world is run with Din. And the Midah of Din, Lashon of the Targum, the Midah of Din came in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Midah of Din says, Haman is a Rasha. Haman was in Shushan, he made a special trip to Yerushalayim to stop the building of the Beis HaMikdash. He stuck his nose into the place, it didn't even concern him. He's in Shushan, what, you know? He goes to Yerushalayim to stop the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And here you're going to let Ahasuerus raise him up and give him covet? And raise him up? He's from Agag. Agag is from Amalek. The Rishayim. And he's appointed over everyone. And his chair is lifted above all the other ones. Haman deserves this. Would you say that Haman deserves this? He deserves this covet? Strike him down! Is that Din? That's Din, the Haman, Harasha, who tried to stop the building of the Beis HaMikdash, tried to, he did. The building of the Beis HaMikdash, he has Yichus from Agog, Harasha, should be the ruler of everything? Is that Din? Kadosh Baruch Hu answered.
Who's asking this question?
The Mida called Din.
Midas
Adin, yeah, went up in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That means according to the guidelines, the parameters of Midas Adin, this shouldn't be. Haman doesn't deserve it. Kadosh Baruch Hu answered, wait. Tell the Midas Adin, you just wait. Wait. Haman deserves it, but he's not going to get it yet. Hashem says he wants to strike Haman down at his highest point. He wants to wait. Wait until Haman was wicked, but he had yet to achieve notoriety. He wasn't universally known. He wasn't like a household phrase. He didn't become a verb yet. You know, there's people that became head. Right. You know, there's people that become verbs. You know, are you gonna Dr. Phil me? You
know, whoops! I pulled a Homer.
Yeah, pulled a Homer. So Haman. He wasn't a verb yet. Hashem said, first I want to raise him up. Raising him up is part of the din. That's what Hashem is saying. We're not ignoring the Midas HaDin. We want to raise him up high. The entire world should hear from him. He should have the ultimate power, be at the highest pinnacle of his achievements, the center. All the nations should hear from him. And then I'm going to pay him back for all the tsar, all the pain, all the grief that him and his father's caused to Bnei Yisrael.
So what does this have to do with the... Did we answer the Achim Adu?
Zachar Dvar Me'ela is after this conversation that Hashem had with the Midas HaDin. Huh. After the Achar Dvar Me'ela... I'm sorry, that's wrong. That's wrong. The Tagum doesn't say that. I'm not sure. It could be that that's the pshat. The Achar Dvar Me'ela is after this conversation Hashem has with the Midas HaDin. Achar Dvar Me'ela, after this conversation, so then Gidol HaMelech HaKashverosh says Haman. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu raised him up. I'm not sure how to read it. Or it could be that Achar Dvar Me'ela is referring to something else. Rashi says, Achar Dvar Me'ela. Kadosh Baruch Hu is always makdim refu lamaka. Hashem prepares the antidote before the onset of the illness. The first two prakim, all the players were getting into place. You have Mordechai, you got Esther, you got Haman exactly now. Everybody's where Hashem wants them. Esther is the antidote. Esther is the refuah. Haman's the Makkah. So Achar Dvar Me'ela is Esther's already there. She's in position. So now it's time to raise up Haman.
When Haman gained power, did Mordechai see right away that this was like that he would be the cause of the problem?
Yeah. You'll see by the way Mordechai reacted to Haman. He didn't give him even the smallest amount of courtesy. So Achar Dvar Me'ela, according to Rashi, is after Esther was, you know, Vashti was knocked out of the way. All the events that led up to getting Esther in there. All the Nisim. That's the Dvarim. Now it's time for Haman to be raised up. So that's the Targum this Rashi. The Vilna Gaon on this Pasuk. First of all, the Vilna Gaon explains what's the difference between Gidal HaMelech, the Melech made him big, and Vayinaseyu, he's lifted him up. He defines Gidal, is it a Achashverosh made him rich? Gidal means he made him financially wealthy, financially independent, made him rich. So he made him into a bigger person. He has more things. He's got more toys, more stuff.
So what was the money he was offering was just money that Ahasuerus already gave him?
Or it could be invested in, and he was giving him the returns.
Yeah.
Gid al-Melech Ahasuerus is Haman. Ahasuerus made Haman wealthy. Vayinaseu. Was that he gave him covet. So Gidl is in money, and Vayinaseu is covet. Honor. He raised him up, lifted him up. And the words Achar Advar Me'ela, after these things, the Vilgain says, which things? Haman was the one that was responsible for changing the entire judicial system of Persia, of the Persian Empire. Until then, there were judges, they would judge a case, and then according to the law of the land, they would decide the case, and Ahasuerus had nothing to do with it. He wasn't personally involved in it. Especially if it was something that concerned, it was a matter which concerned the king directly. He was not personally involved in it. Haman was the one that effected a change in that. That all mishpat, all law in the country should end up by Ahasuerus' desk.
Well,
in the first paragraph, we said that was how Haman struck fear. Wanted to strike fear. He wanted to strike a chord of fear in the hearts of all the citizens of Ahasuerus' empire. That Ahasuerus should judge these cases himself, and Ahasuerus should judge to execute Vashti himself, personally. Now, what Haman had in mind when he suggested that was definitely for his own benefit. Haman was a self-serving individual. He never did anything altruistically for someone else. He's filled with self-interest. But it turned out, to pour over his own face. It came back to hit him. Haman changed Persian law. The king judges cases personally. The officers don't have an opinion. They don't join the king in his decision. He doesn't have a panel of judges, which he sits at the head of. He judges the case himself.
He's also a regular at court. It's just the king can do what he wants.
It seems like the king has ultimate power over all law and actual practice. For him to judge every single case in the kingdom is just not practical. But if he wants to, he could.
Didn't Esther just make the Sanhedrin, reinstate the Sanhedrin, though?
Yeah, she made a Sanhedrin to sit in the gate of the king. And therefore?
I don't know. Didn't they kind of serve that purpose also?
For Jews. You wonder what purpose Ahasuerus would have them?
Well,
we suggested that he would want an Eitzah, he'd want counsel from them.
Uh-huh.
If you're trying to figure out a Derech HaTeva way for them being there, it's a good thing for the palace for them being there.
Uh-huh.
Now, it is interesting. For Esther to do such a thing without Ahasuerus' knowledge would be a grand nace.
Especially since...
They're right there by the gate of the king, so we'll assume that it was with Ahasuerus' knowledge. This is the same Ahasuerus that he was making, we said he was making a Beis HaMikdash, an anti-Beis HaMikdash, with the 10 types of Tumah and the 7 types of destruction, and using the Shlomo Melech's throne, and the Big Dekuna, and making curtains like the Mishkan. I'm just wondering, which way to go with this? Would you say... That's a simon of, everything he did until he met Esther was in one direction. The minute he met Esther, he was no longer a free man. So the same person that was building up the Tumah quotient and the level of destruction, the anti, Chas V'Shalom, the anti-God, so that same Melech would acquiesce, would grant his queen the favor of having a Sanhedrin there, which is the opposite of what he's trying to do. So it just shows you how much... how little control he had over himself from the point Esther came in there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way of going with it.
Couldn't you say from that maybe it doesn't really fit so well?
The other way of going with it, which I'm not necessarily so comfortable with it, I think you'd have to find a source for this, is that Ibidafka wanted the Sanhedrin there because he was making an anti-Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash had the Sanhedrin by the Lishkas HaGazis.
Then why would he pick... Jews for the Sanhedrin. Why would there be?
Because
Jews?
Isn't that the ultimate tumah, is to take the Kedusha and tear it down?
Well, last time with the seven, his seven advisors were the exact opposite.
Right, they were connected to Kabbalists.
So he would use the exact opposite again.
Yeah, I'm saying I don't know. Baruch Hashem, I'm not privy to the way these people think. There's no reason why we should be. It was just an idea. I'm saying, you know, we're assuming that he knew about it. I mean, that's the first Teretz. First Teretz is he didn't know about it. You know, but assuming, second Teretz, assuming he knew about it, so why would he agree? So one reason is because Esther's the Malkah now. When you say she's the queen, that means she rules. That means she gets what she wants. In certain areas. There's a Ruchniistic quotient here. There's Nisan going on. Esther's a Malkah. She rules. Achashverosh is a puppet. Now, how that worked out on the ground, you could work it out, but it's not really important.
She had what Vashti claimed to have.
Right, she had the real power. Exactly. Achashverosh was trying to replace Vashti with someone that wouldn't be as powerful for Vashti, and he ended up with someone that had all the power. So how that, you know, this, when someone has all the power, we're talking about Kechas Ruchnis, we're talking about spiritual powers, so then things work out somehow in this world. There's no obstacles in front of someone that has power from a Kadosh Baruch. And the third Mahalach, which I was thinking, is that it could be that Achashverosh deliberately wanted them there in order to have more parallels to the Beis Hamikdash. But that brings with the problems of its own. In any case, the Vilna Gaon says that Haman put the noose around his head because this change in the way the Persian system worked ended up being the tool that enabled Achashverosh to kill off Bigson and Seresh right away, starting with that. They found out about it, he said, okay, hang them. Hang them. Now these people, they're Shemir Hasaf. Shemir Hasaf, these two people were like the most prestigious ministers, you know, the highest you can get in Persian society. They were up there.
Who?
The Shemir Hasaf, the guards of the threshold. In the pecking order of the royal household, they were at the very top.
Really?
Yeah, the Gemara Megillah talks about, you know, different Kriyas HaTorah. Sometimes we have three people, sometimes we have four, sometimes five, sometimes six, sometimes seven. Three people is a weekday, four is Rosh Chodesh,
seven is Shabbos.
So the Gemara brings Pesukim to show you the significance of certain numbers, or the numbers which correspond to three people. And the Gemara says there were five Raya Pnei HaMelech, five people that they got to see the king on a regular basis, which was a privilege. And of the five, there were three of them that they were more chashev than the other two. The group of five Raya Pnei HaMelech, the five officers that saw the king on a regular basis, three of those five were a group within a group. They were the elite of the elite. And they were called Shemri Hasaf. And very chashev. So Bigson and Sharash are two out of three. And Achashverosh was able to kill them like that, and instantly. Only because of Haman's law. I'm sorry, there were seven Raya Pnei HaMelech. These were three of the seven.
There were two, no?
There was Bigson and Seresh. There were two of the seven Raya Pnei HaMelech. There were seven
right.
of those who saw the king's face. Of the seven, there were three that were more chashev.
Right.
Three out of seven. So there were four ordinary and three special. And Bigson and Seresh were two of those three.
Right.
I'm sorry. So Achashverosh is very grateful to Haman. That Haman brought about this change in the law. Achashverosh wanted nothing better than to take an active hand in this case. I mean, if Chas v'Shalom, somebody was in trouble because of a threat, would they want the case tangled up in the legislature or in the courts?
How did they get into such a high position if they were, like, they're from some random country that nobody even knew the language and, like, they somehow got...
There was some from such special country that only the elitists of the country knew the language. Why are you putting it, you know, you could say it my way also. It doesn't really present a challenge how they got it. They were chashev people. Mm-hmm. By the Persian standards, they were chashev people. I mean, just because no one knew the language doesn't make them into nobodies. Well, look who's head of the United Nations Assembly, you know. Because, you know, the Kashivas in the non-Jew in this world, the Persian world, is you don't have to do very much to earn it. You don't have to be very chashuv. You know, when Avraham Avinu made a mishteh for Yitzchak when he was born, he invited the Gdeli Eilam. Rashi says, who's the Gdeli Eilam? Avimelech, Fichal. Avimelech, Melech Pishni, Fichal, his Tzara. Avimelech was a lowlife. Avimelech took married women away from their husbands. The Plishtim were lowlifes. He's a lowlife. And he's called Gedali Eilam. Because that, by the Eilam, he's a gadol. So Achashverosh was very, very glad that he had, and he felt very fortunate that he had such a wise and loyal servant like Haman that gave him such good advice. You know, people are going to think twice before they start up with Achashverosh again because there's no appeal. Off with their heads. And it was Haman's doing. That's Achra Dvar Me'ila. Of course, this, you know, this ended up being a double-edged sword because Achashverosh himself implemented this against Haman. But that's later. Pasuk Beis.
He ends up killing three of his most important ministers along this.
Yeah, it's a great law. And Vashti. And it's awesome. The Midrasham are Pashut self-destructing, which is the true picture of things. We shouldn't have to have a good person or some kind of good force to destroy evil things. Evil things should just self-destruct on their own. The evil should, just, you know, the evil should destroy the evil. V'chol Avdi Amalek, all the servants of the king, Asher B'Shar Amalek, which are in the gates of the king, Kairim, they go down on their knees, and Mishtachav, and prostrate themselves, Lahaman. All of a sudden, Hadam gets, you know, this covered. Wherever he goes, actually the pasuk says B'Shar Amalek, by the palatial gates, Haman passes by, everyone's got to bow down. Kichen Tzivalei Amalek. The king commanded him so. The way I read it is a little bit awkward, purposely so. The king commanded him so. It's a little bit awkward. We'll get back to it. Kichen Tzivalei. I mean, the Pashup Shad is Kichen Tzivalei Amalek. The king commanded people to do this in regards to him. The word loy would be translated as in regards to him. Mordechai lo yikra, Mordechai will not go down on his knees, lo yishtach ve lo yishtach ve, he won't bow. Alright. First the Targum. I guess, actually first Rashi. Rashi says, why were they bowing down to Haman? She'atza atzmai Eloiha. Haman ascribed divinity to himself. It's been done before, it'll probably happen again, chas v'shalom. He claimed he was a god. Paro made that claim. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu used to always go meet Paro early in the morning when he was going to the bathroom, because Paro claimed he was a god. Haman claimed he was a god. Yashka claimed he was a god. We suffer from this. This god complex.
So he was able to do that, claim to be a god, when Achashverosh doesn't even do that?
He's Achashverosh's god.
And Achashverosh is fine with that. Yeah, I raised you up, your power comes from me, but you can be
Lehabdol, Elif Alfi Havdolis. Nebuchadnezzar bowed down to Daniel, and he treated him and he worshipped him like a god. And he didn't give over the kingdom to him. He's the power of the kingdom. Haman, you know, we understand this on levels of Kekas Ataiv. You know, Ferdinand and Isabella, even though they banished all the Jews from Spain in 1492, they gave permission to one Jew. They made an exception in the case of one Jew, Don Isaac Abarbanel. He was the finance minister. They wanted him to remain. They said he could stay. And he opted out of it. He chose not to be the only Jew to legally reside in Spain. Why? Because they know if he leaves, then it's over. And it was. Does anybody ever hear of Spain? They used to be a world power. Really? The Spanish Armada.
Everyone's a world power.
Now there's a third world, right. But there's a tzaddik in the palace.
In where?
There's a tzaddik in the palace. Yeravim HaMelech. Yeravim HaMelech. You know the maestro with Yeravim HaMelech? Yeravim HaMelech was the son of Achav.
There's still Jews that live there now.
Not so many.
Achav had tremendous success in his wars. One of the sources of his success is because he had Avadja in his parents. His son wanted the children of Avadja to be in his palace. He sought to get them. He lent money to their mother. Avadja passed away. Yeravim lent money to Avadja's widow. She couldn't pay it back. He entrapped her in a loan scheme. He said, "It's okay, I'll take your kids." It's a Meisen Tanach. The Hatzlacha of a kingdom, the Ruchni comes from a Sherish Ruchni. They understood this. That's on the Tzad HaTayv. Kadosh Baruch Hu created a balance. Kadosh Baruch Hu created everything. Zalu'uma Zebar Alakim, to every force is a counterforce. That means the same way that a true Hatzlacha could come to a kingdom by a Tzaddik being a vital component of the kingdom. So then perceived Hatzlacha, not true Hatzlacha, perceived Hatzlacha could come to a kingdom by having the biggest Rasha in the kingdom. That's it. And Haman was perceived as the source of impurity that the kingdom drew their Hatzlacha, the success from the Tumma, from the Kekos HaTumma of Haman. He made himself into a god. So obviously Mordechai is not going to bow down. That's Rashi.
So he really
made himself into a god. Yes, he made himself into a god, just like Parai and just like Yashka. Made himself into a god. The Targum tells us that they set up some kind of Avodah Zarah in the palace of the king by the gates. And Haman would stand by this Avodah Zarah. I mean, there's other versions of Chazal that Haman had, you know, Medrash, he had an Avodah Zarah attached to his clothing. The Medrash. And the Targum seems to say that they had a structure. I mean, that's only a technical difference. I mean, Emaisa was an Avodah Zarah. Either he carried it with him wherever he went, or they built something and he used to stand there and they have like some kind of assembly point where people would come and bow down to Haman with the Avodah Zarah. It's a very similar idea to Haman proclaiming himself as an Avodah Zarah. The only difference is that instead of Haman being inherently the Avodah Zarah, Haman is making a chibur. He's making a combo here. He's combining his persona, his great and powerful persona, with the Avodah Zarah. He's melding himself to the Avodah Zarah. So Rashi said Haman actually made himself into Avodah Zarah. The Medrash says that he integrated into his clothing, which is meaning that him and Avodah Zarah are turning together. The Avodah Zarah clothes me. This is my clothing. The Avodah Zarah serves my body. Or according to the Targum, so then they had the Avodah Zarah was in the palace of the king, and Haman would stand by it. So it's also an Indian of being one with the Avodah Zarah, and they'd bow down. But Mordechai wouldn't bow down because he's bowing down to the Avodah Zarah. So he wouldn't bow down to the Avodah Zarah, the Targum says. And the Targum says, okay, don't bow down to the Avodah Zarah, just bow down to Haman. And I'll work it out in a way that it's clear that you're not bowing down to the Avodah Zarah. You can work it out. Work it out. He said, no, he won't. He wouldn't bow down to Haman either. There's a famous Medrash that Mordechai and Haman, they were soldiers in Ahasuerus' army. And they found themselves stuck in a wilderness and a desert, and there was no place to draw sustenance from, no food, no water. But Mordechai packed a lunch. He had food. He had what to sustain himself. And he had enough for two people. But, Haman had nothing. And Haman was going to die. Haman begged Mordecai to share the food with him. And this is also one of the things which we have to... I mean, I'm sure everyone knows this medrash. You know this medrash. Haman asked Mordecai to share the food with him. Mordecai has Haman at his mercy. I have to assume that Haman, even in his younger years, was not a tzaddik. And Haman's from a malik. Even if he had never done anything wrong in his life, he's from a malik. He has to be exterminated. If someone from a malik is dying of hunger and thirst, you don't give them food. Halacha l'maisa. If we would know who Amalek is, we would you know, this is halacha l'maisa. Mamash halacha l'maisa. You don't, a Amalek is at the bottom of a well. You don't give him a ladder. Halacha l'maisa. To kill him is awesome. You can't do it. We're not to bail him now. You know, you can't murder people. No, you can't. Even someone that deserves to die, you can't take matters in your own hands. But he's dying to save him. You don't give him the ladder. You don't send him a rope. And Mordechai is sharing his food with Haman. I will leave that question for a moment. But the Targum says, the Haman, Haman says, okay, I'll buy the food off you. And Mordechai says, well, what do you got? Whatever Haman had wasn't enough. Mordechai says, I'm not going to give you this food for, your lucky rabbit's foot or whatever. I'm not giving it to you. So Haman said, I'm desperate. I'll give you anything. He said, well, if you be my slave, I'll give you the food. Haman had no choice. He'd rather be a slave Then a free man that was dead, and he sold himself, and they wrote a contract on the bottom of Haman's shoe. No, I'm sorry, on the bottom of Mordecai's shoe. That was the paper that was available at the time, the writing service, and they wrote it on the bottom of Mordecai's shoe. So Haman was Mordecai's slave. Now, how Haman got to his position of importance, and Mordecai didn't enforce the sale, I think it's not so hard to understand. It's one thing to have a bill of sale, someone that is your slave, legally is your slave. It's another thing to enforce it. Once you get back to civilization, he's got power, he's got friends, he's got homies, he's got a posse, It's not so easy to enforce. Haman's a powerful man. So the fact that Mordecai had a contract, Haman was a slave, that gives him legal rights over Haman, but he can't enforce it. But he was a slave. And the Targum says he wasn't going to bow to his slave. So even if he could have bowed to Haman without bowing to the Avodah Zarah, he wouldn't. He's a slave. Haman sold himself for bread. So he's just not going to bow. Lo yikrav, lo yishtachav. That could be the double lashon. He's not going to bow, he's not going to bow. The first one could be referring to Haman, the second one could be referring to Avodah Zarah. That's what it sounds like from the Targum. It's a double lashon of bowing, because there's two things to bow to. So why didn't the Mordecai kill Haman? And, I didn't see anything explicit about this in the Mefarshim, but I would assume that the Mahalach goes something like this. That Mordecai, Mordecai at Tzaddik, and Tzaddikim in general, they view the events of the world with different eyeballs than we do. They have a different perspective. Everything is a shkacha pratis. Mordecai stuck in the desert with his arch enemy Haman. Dastardly Haman. Haman's at his mercy. Mordecai happens to have double rations. Haman doesn't have any rations. It's not mikra. It's not happenstance. It didn't just happen like that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it happen. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu had meant for Mordecai to kill Haman, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have done it with a lot less elaborate preparation. If Hashem arranged matters that Haman was at Mordecai's mercy, and Haman's willing to do anything in order to get that piece of bread, then Mordecai saw it as a siman in the Shemayim that Haman has to make the ultimate sacrifice to get that last piece of bread. And if that's Ratzon Hashem, then he's not messing with it. But that's just, some thoughts that were going through my mind. It's a shame we got to continue Pasuk Beis. We're not finished. Rabbi Sa. Call to a vash, okay.